The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. Yeah, just to fix a bit of fake news that I put out yesterday inadvertently. And that was when we were talking about the story about the Google Trends and the three most searched for words. I mentioned that the three most searched for words included Corona, stock, and crossword puzzle. And then for some reason, I mentioned the Israeli word for crossword puzzle, and I said chidon, which of course is the incorrect word. Chidon is a quiz. A crossword puzzle in Hebrew is called tashbetz, and that is really the word that was searched for. I mean, obviously these terms were Hebrew terms that were searched for rather than in English language. And so crossword puzzle doesn't quite go down as a word, but when you talk about tashbetz, which is the correct word for crossword puzzle, then it does go down. So my apologies for that incorrect information. And I know there were loads of people who heard it and wanted to say something and then refrained. So I thank you all for doing that. It's good to be able to put a wrong right. And just another small little snippet story before we get into the main bits of stories. And that is the story about excavations that are going along on Ammunition Hill in order to construct a new light rail track in Jerusalem. And during the course of these excavations on Givat Tachmoshet, as it's called in Hebrew, Ammunition Hill, the body of a Jordanian soldier has been discovered. He's waited apparently for 54 years to be discovered by this excavation, which is quite a fascinating thing.
But it's incredible because there were, I mean, I know as a kid, when we went to visit Israel, I had family who lived near there, and we used to play in those trenches at Givat HaTachmoshet. Right. And I would have thought that everything that, you know, any bodies or anyone would have been uncovered by now.
Well, apparently this is not the first time that construction work at the site has actually revealed remnants from the fighting during the Six-Day War. During the period of the Six-Day War, Givat HaTachmoshet was a Jordanian army post. Of course, in those days and before the end of the war, that was in the east part of Jerusalem, which had been under Jordanian rule up until that point. And Givat HaTachmoshet is well recognized as being the location of one of the most fierce battles that was fought during the Six-Day War. But what was fascinating is the fact that this body was found with remnants around it, so that it was really easy to be able to identify it as someone, as a Jordanian soldier. It's not clear exactly what the plans of this body, but I'm guessing that they will return it to Jordan. That seems to be the right and the most proper thing to do. Originally, it was first transferred to the Forensic Medicine Institute. They determined very quickly that it did belong to a Jordanian soldier. So in his place, will go, I suppose, a new light rail track. Now that he's been discovered, and I presume will be laid to rest, properly, in accordance with the local customs.
Just before you get on to the other stories as well, somebody asking about the fires in Jerusalem.
So we do want to talk, excuse me, about the fires in Jerusalem. That was one of our main stories. Unfortunately, the fires in Jerusalem, the story is far from over. And in fact, government has reached out to neighboring countries to ask for some international assistance in order to try to bring these fires under control. There was a point yesterday when we were led to believe that everything was under control and that things had calmed down, but then there was another flare-up. And as a result of that, the government decided to reach out to Greece, to Cyprus, Italy, France, Croatia, other countries around, to ask them to send equipment, whether they be firefighting planes or potentially even firefighters, to help with these fires that continue to rage around the area of Jerusalem. We understand that the Hadassah in Karim Hospital is right in the line of fire, and there have been a lot of considerations about whether the hospital itself needs to be evacuated or not. As of now, the hospital is not being evacuated, but the staff and the firefighters are all standing by in the event that things might change and the hospital may need to be evacuated. But certainly the area around Tsuba, Mount Eitan, Shoeva, Shoresh, all of those areas, unfortunately, lots and lots of damage done to the forests around that area. The fires, unfortunately, are still not out. The weather continues to be hot. There is still some wind in inconvenient places to fan the flames. So as of things right now, apparently 16,000 dunams had been burned as of Sunday night, which is almost four times the area that was built, that was burned in recent fires. A lot of people are comparing this fire to the Mount Carmel fire. That one, unfortunately, claimed 44 lives a few years ago. This one, fortunately, has done some damage, but not yet claimed any lives, even though quite a number of people, more than 2,000 people, still evacuated from their homes. Some are going back, some are backwards and forwards, in and out a little bit as the flames come and go. Drones apparently are being used to monitor the residential areas to make sure that nobody's been left behind and to see what risk is being, what risk there is to property in those areas to try somehow to save the property. So it still continues to be a serious situation. And let's hope that over the course of today, the firefighters, together with some help from their international colleagues, will be brought under control.
Crazy. Another crazy story is that Poland is considering cancelling Israeli school trips to concentration camps. This is an incredibly bizarre move.
Well, it's interesting how the logic is building, because this, of course, is all part of the diplomatic spat that is being experienced at the moment between Israel and Poland after the Polish government and parliament decided to enact this law which would effectively prevent people from being able to claim restitution on property that might have been confiscated illegally at the time or unjustly going back many, many years. And they've put a certain statute of limitations, a certain moratorium on how many years you can go back in order to claim property that has been taken not only from Jews, but indeed from non-Jews as well. But particularly during the time that the Nazis were in control in Poland, and the Polish government has seen fit to stop these claims. The Israeli government is furious over this particular action, feels that it's some sort of an anti-Semitic action, that it particularly disadvantages Jews who might have had their property taken away from them. And so that has then has rolled into a greater diplomatic spat where each country has withdrawn their respective ambassadors from the other country. The Israeli ambassador to Poland has returned to Israel, and apparently the Polish ambassador to Israel has also been recalled. And then we've had Poland's deputy foreign minister announcing last night that Poland would re-examine trips that Israeli high schools take each year to concentration camps in Poland, saying he would make, in inverted commas, appropriate decisions on the matter. But then he goes on to make a very, very interesting statement. And he then says that he feels that the education that is being given to high school students, particularly as part of these trips, is inappropriate, and that it presents a negative side of Poland, and that it effectively is based upon hatred of Poland. And this is the way that our young people are being educated, by coming to the concentration camps, by visiting Poland, by hearing what took place on Polish territory. The deputy foreign minister feels that this is a form of negative education, and that it effectively fills the heads of our high school students with negative concepts about Poland. And that's really what's driving him to say we need to reconsider this, because he thinks that that negative education is filtering down through the system to create a certain negative view of Poland in Israeli society. That's his justification for this move. So some people who have been involved in sending high school students to Poland as part of the trip to visit the concentration camps have made it clear that the education that's given to high school students during these trips is really separated into two distinct parts. Poland of today, and educating people about what is going on in Poland today, as opposed to what took place back in the days of the Shoah, which we do have a certain acceptance of the fact that local Poles are not wholly absolved from actions which took place during the Shoah, because of course the Poles would like to tell you that it was only the Nazis who influenced what happened on Polish territory, and that the Polish community, population, local Poles were not involved at all. We certainly have evidence to suggest that that might be a mistaken view, but it is a highly controversial issue, because the Poles feel that effectively their nation, their country, is being smeared by the events that took place, which they blame wholly on the Nazis and the Nazi regime who were in charge, who were in control of Poland at the time. So it's a very interesting debate. And of course, you know, one can't ignore the fact that a certain level of anti-Semitism has also come out of Poland over the years in recent times. And one has to wonder whether we need to ignore that as well, and to check whether the Polish government have taken some action in order to say we are against anti-Semitism in the current day, and that we will take action against it, and that that really should help to present a more positive view that can be presented not only to Israeli high school students, but indeed to Israelis and Jews around the world about what Poland is today as opposed to what it was during the days of the Shoah. It's a fascinating debate.
It really is, because when I think about my first experience of going to any of these sites wasn't in Poland, it was in the Czech Republic. It was just outside Prague where I went to Terezin. And what I find fascinating there, what I find fascinating in Berlin, other places that I've been, is there is this duality, and there is nuance and complexity in terms of, and the same is in Holland. If you read a lot about what went on in that area, there were people who were very supportive to the Jewish community, and there were those that were a horror. And all of these things can be true at the same time. It seems to be that Poland has drawn the line in accepting any form of responsibility whatsoever, which I find so strange.
And also, I think it seems to be reinforced by this law. Why would they enact a law to prevent people who had property confiscated for them unjustly way back in the day who, for whatever good reason, have not yet come out and laid claim to that property? Why would they now choose to prevent them from coming out and saying, we lay claim to it?
Because it's almost like Polish Jews weren't Poles.
So that's almost the case. And again, it just goes back to this point of, to what extent were local Poles responsible for what went on in Poland at the hand of the Polish community, at the hand of the Polish population? We can't simply say we weren't there, we didn't see, we didn't hear, we weren't part of this. It was all them who came from outside of our country and imposed this upon us. I think that to the extent that the local people were involved, were perhaps involved by ignoring rather than standing up and speaking out, perhaps that's also a certain level of responsibility, that people weren't prepared to stand up. They were just kind of cowering under the bed and hoping that this problem would go away without them having to be involved. Is that also some responsibility that needs to be taken? So this is a complex story. It's a complex relationship, as indeed is the relationship that we have with Germany, because you and I know that there are many people who today still hold Germany responsible for what happened way back when, and that the current generation of Germans should take as much responsibility as we could impose upon their ancestors. And in fact, there are many people in Germany who do go around feeling the weight of this responsibility, that things that happen in their country. But it's impossible to entirely divorce the current day from what happened during the days of the Shoah. I think it's a virtual impossibility.
Absolutely. Finally, the Israeli government has seized 23 tons of chocolate that were meant to be used to raise funds for Gaza. Tell us about the story.
I was just sort of wondering where I was when this chocolate was being seized, Howard. I don't know what you feel about this, but
23 tons of chocolates is not a little bit of chocolate.
No, that would have gone down. These are chocolate bars that were apparently confiscated on Monday. They were apparently designed to serve as something of an alternative currency to Hamas, who are struggling at the moment, really struggling to keep themselves solvent, because the Israeli government has also stopped the flow of funds from Qatar in order to try somehow to bring a longer term solution to the Gaza issue, and they feel that by cutting off funding, it will potentially convince Hamas to see things in a slightly different way. So Hamas, as creative as always, have found alternative ways of dealing with things, and apparently this chocolate that was confiscated is one of them, that these bars of chocolate were imported by two Gazan companies, that they effectively, these companies belong to a family which is headed by a well-known Gaza money exchange person and the family. And this family is very, very closely associated with Hamas. And in the end, these chocolates were designed to be sold in Gaza in order to raise funds for Hamas, that Hamas would effectively take hold of.
Okay, the so they weren't being handed out to children in Gaza. They were actually just going to be sold there, and that money was going to be used for Hamas, presumably for nefarious purposes.
One assumes so, because obviously this has all been kept under wraps and it's all been hidden away to some degree. But apparently chocolate is not the only currency that is being used. There are a number of similar products that are being imported into Gaza. Apparently this is worth tens of millions of dollars to Hamas. And this same family that we're talking about that owns the import companies that were importing these chocolates, they also apparently use their family companies to funnel tens of millions of dollars from Iran to Hamas. So they apparently are very, very active on the whole money laundering scene, and the Israeli money laundering and terror financing prohibition authority has become very involved to track the flow of funds and the flow of goods and services that apparently are being used to try to keep Hamas afloat. And of course, the Israeli government at the moment, at least, seems to be trying to place a very substantial economic embargo on Hamas to convince them to behave in a slightly different way. It's going to be interesting to see how all of that progresses. We do know that there's a lot of action, a lot of trade that goes on in the tunnels between Gaza and Egypt, and that is indeed very, very difficult to police or to stop. And one imagines that the trade that's going through those tunnels is at its peak at the moment, in light of the lack of the Qatari money that's flowing to Gaza.
Very interesting indeed. Anthony Reich, thank you as always.